And hello again, everybody. Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff here on Giants.com. Not any Big Blue Kickoff. It will be our wrap-up show for this season. Unfortunately, it ends a little earlier than we all would have expected. But again, I am Russ Salzberg, along with two-time Super Bowl champion David Deal. The number, as always, to call is 201-939-4513. On Twitter, it is hashtag GiantsChat. If you didn't tune in yesterday and you're tuning in today for the first time, I wish all of you a Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, my friend, out there.
Thank you very much. Well. And hopefully it'll be a very Happy New Year for our Giants, who, as we know, 3-13 was not what we wanted, but it is what it is. We have a new general manager in place. The next thing is to have a new head coach in place, and we go from there. I know I said from the get-go, the minute Jerry and Ben were let go, I said I was hoping that Dave Gettleman, that was my first choice, so I was happy about that. And I, from what I understand, you're pleased about it as well?
Absolutely. Dave Gettleman is somebody that I have a great relationship with. I've known Dave for over 16 years now. And literally, I would say for about seven or eight straight years, coming in to go into the cold tub, healing up on whether it was a practice day or not, going in there to get the coffee bright and early in the morning. And sure enough, Dave Gettleman was one of those guys. And they're getting coffee, getting ready to grind on the day. And I absolutely have nothing but the utmost respect for him, not only as a person because he's a great man, but as an evaluator. I mean, for myself, he was always fair and he was always honest with me. If he saw anything, he would say it to me. Hey, you know, guys are starting to do this. They're trying to work this against you, you know, think about it. So just small things like that, just because, number one, I had a relationship with him, but two, he always has always said, I always have that coach in me. I always have that teacher in me. And if there was any little thing that he could do, whether it was for myself or for anybody else that he knew and spoke to, he would tell him. And that's just the type of person that he is. And going back, listening to the press conference, I love the fact, I don't want guys who just want to win. I want guys who hate to lose, that have that competitive fire, that are professional NFL players that love this game and have that passion. And believe me, for somebody that, like he said, I'm at peace when I'm sitting there with a controller in my hand breaking down film, you know that he's doing that right now and doing whatever he can to get this Giants team and this organization back to the championship culture that it should be.
What strikes me about him, and you played for him and you have that relationship, what strikes me about Dave Gettleman, he exudes a lot of confidence. Now, a lot of people have a lot of confidence, but his confidence comes, my assessment, comes to me from what I gather, he's a guy who's extremely comfortable in his own skin.
Without a doubt.
And to me, he's a guy's guy. And I don't want that to sound chauvinistic. He's just I mean, when he's talking to people.
Think about it during the press conference.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was with Marv. He goes, oh, wait, Marv. Like, that's just him.
Yeah,
he's
a dude. He's a regular guy.
He is a football guy, and day in and day out, he is the exact same person with the exact same energy and brings that fire day in and day out. Like you said, I want to go in there and kick ass every single day. And believe me, he will do that. And I just love the fact that right away he's taken on ownership. He's been right in the mix of things, you know, going from, you know, making changes last Saturday before the game to now getting ready for this, you know, this upcoming season and interviewing possible head coach candidates. He is all in.
And you know, you mentioned possible head coach candidates. Everybody, I mean, everybody knows everybody. There's more leaks than the Titanic had leaks. Everybody knows everybody. We heard, oh, John Mara and Dave Gettleman, they were going to be Monday in Boston interviewing Josh
McDaniels.
Let me tell you something. I have full confidence in Dave, but people have already decided it's predetermined in his mind, and I don't think for a second he has it predetermined. I might be wrong.
Oh, no.
I don't think he has it for a second predetermined who's going to be his head coach. I think he's going to talk to everybody with John Mara, and then it'll be predetermined if somebody wows him or maybe somebody he didn't expect to be the guy. We will just wait and see, but I don't think there is anything predetermined.
He has a game plan. He has a way that he wants to execute and implement things. But you can't put the cart before the horse. He is taking one step at a time, evaluating the coaches, the players, and figuring out what is the best situation right here for the New York Giants. And, you know, it was great. Bob Pop and I had the opportunity to interview Dave as well. And he talked. I already spoke and spent a lot of time with Odell Beckham Jr. on Saturday. I'm going to meet and interview and talk today. He's meeting with Eli Apple. And then sometime in the near future, he said he has a meeting set up with Eli Manning. So he's already starting to address different aspects and different interests of players moving forward that either are going to be a part of this team or are not.
Yep, I agree. Well, the phone lines are open and they are busy, as Dave and I would expect. 201-939-4513 on Twitter. It is hashtag Giants Chat. Let's open up this day, this third day of January 2018, by going to our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., and speaking with Scott. Scott, Happy New Year. You're on with Russ and David.
Gentlemen, it's an honor to speak with you.
How you doing today?
How's everything?
Good, good. One quick comment and then two questions. You know, I hear said over and over again on this show that trading down is the way to go, and sure, I'd like to go that way, but I think it's really important for people to recognize that you need a dance partner in order to do that. So maybe they can trade down, maybe they can't. My point is they better have a plan for using that number two pick in case they don't have a dance partner to trade down.
I'm sure that we would have their plan. I mean, you just heard David Deal here speaking. I mean, Dave Gettleman is nobody's fool. He's at work. He was at work the day he arrived, and that's what he's doing now. So I'm sure he's figuring out who you can dance with, who you can't dance with. And, you know, everybody's also talking about drafting. Correct me if I'm wrong. He's also got to see what they can do in terms of free agency and all that.
Exactly. Number one, if there is a pick there, if there is a player that – he feels will help transition this organization to where they need to be, they'll make the pick at number two, whether it's a quarterback or whatever position that it is. But at the same time, when you are sitting at the number two value pick, and there are a lot of teams that want a quarterback out there, you have a lot of flexibility, and more than any of that, you have a lot of power with that number two pick, with what you can try to ask and get from other football teams, as we've seen in the past with the draft. So if you don't have that player at number two that you are 100% committed and sold on, and you can get value by trading down, it will help your draft, especially when you're sitting there, like I said, looking at teams that are desperately buying for a quarterback.
Yeah, Scott, I had an interview on New Year's Day on Monday with John Mara and asked him about, you know, who they like to draft. He said, we don't even know at this juncture. And I don't even think that was sidestepping. At this juncture, I don't even think they know who they're going to draft. Well, what they're going to draft. You know, it's got to pan out.
And obviously, we know that they were paying attention to all the players coming into the draft, their regular seasons and everything, but it was still bowl season. It was still towards the end of the Giants' regular season. There's still a lot of film to break down, and there are more than just film. There's a lot of interviewing left to do to see what type of person this is, what type of characteristics this guy have that you see face-to-face that you don't see when you turn on film.
And Scott, nobody loves looking at film more than the new general manager, Dave Gettleman. What else you got for us, Scott?
Yeah, I just want to talk quickly about head coach and QB. On head coach, I know, Russ, you're a big fan of Spagnuolo. So am I, actually.
I am. In full disclosure, making full disclosure, I'm biased. I firmly say that, but I let a guy like David Deal, who's played for him, say better than me.
We both talked about it. Absolutely love Steve Spagnuolo and everything that he's done. Not only for this organization, but the things that he's done for in my life. I know anybody who's ever played for him and on that defense, I mean, he has a personal relationship with everybody and takes the time to drive not only to developing them into the best football player that they can be, but the best man that they can be as well. But having said that, with the turnover, with the way that this last season went, with the defense not playing as well as they did. And I know that it's verbiage and it's words, but when you talk about wholesale changes and changing the culture and the complexity, a lot of people go with that, regardless of what type of resume and who they are as a person. So that's the only reason why I don't see that taking place.
Yeah, I again.
Yeah, I just wanted to share my opinion.
Oh, of course.
I think he's a great talent. I just think he's coordinator talent. North Turner, absolutely great offensive coordinator, offensive genius. He's failed over and over and over again as a head coach.
Wade Phillips.
He needs to clean.
But in fairness, Scott, I understand your point, Scott, but in fairness, I don't think it's fair to put Spags in that category. He had one head coaching job.
Oh, no, I'm just saying.
Okay, the category I'd put him in is defensive coordinator genius. I like him. Maybe they hire him again there. This team needs to clean house. I mean, you made the point yesterday, they're 0-0. That's right. They're 0-0 right now, 500 record. But they got a horrible record. They got a horrible roster. Excuse me. They need O line. They've got one offensive lineman under contract that's played. They need linebackers. They need a cornerback. They need a safety.
Running back. When you go 3-13, you need a lot more pieces.
Yeah. So I want a clean house. And you know what I saw on the television feed on Sunday. It appeared that Spags didn't know the rule. When that extra point got blocked, you know, he was not directing the team to recover that ball and cover it. You know, you need someone, you know, Tom Coughlin knew every in and out of the rule book. It does not appear to me that Spags does.
Okay. What else you got? I think we're nickel and diamond here, but go ahead.
Okay, on QB, you're not going to find a bigger Eli Manning fan than me. But he's going to be 38 years old. They've got to plan for the future. Just think it was malpractice for this team, and you talked about it with Paul yesterday. It's malpractice for this team not to at least see Davis Webb. They were 0-5. They were 1-8. They were 2-13. This guy didn't get a single snap. I just think it was malpractice not to get him ready to get some snaps. I'm not saying starting, but there were opportunities. There were multiple opportunities. With 9, 12, 13 minutes left in a game, put him into a game that was out of reach.
All right, Scott. Thanks for the call.
And you know what? That's something that, you know, we all talked about, and I talked about, and I stressed that when, you know, they decided to make the move to Geno Smith and then ended up getting, you know, Coach McAdoo and Jerry Reese fired, and then the conversations between John Mara and them. You know, when all that stuff took place, he said that there was a conversation that took place 3 weeks earlier. That's when you start preparing and getting Davis Webb acclimated by doing more things in practice so that you can start elevating him and have him dress for games in order to put him in to get a look at him. But when that didn't happen, we saw, obviously, like I said, the firing of Coach McAdoo and Jerry Reese. And then when you're looking at when all that stuff happened, the fact that he didn't get more reps in practice, and then when they started to do it at the end, at that point, all of the receivers were hurt. The run game was inefficient. There was offensive line that were interchangeable, and on there, I think there was 11 or 12 different combinations. So to put him out there, even though you're saying to get a look at him, you wouldn't have been able to evaluate him the right way because of all of the pieces around him that wouldn't have helped elevate him and make him play better or look better out on the field. So I know guys, we understand what's around him. We just want to look at him. Let's say he goes out there, wide receiver runs the wrong route. He throws an interception. Next thing it's going to be, we wasted a third round on this guy. We see what he's capable of. He couldn't even go out there and perform. And then you're setting yourself up for a whole bunch of problems that are taking away from all the good things that he's done this year when you put him in there in a position where he wasn't going
to
win.
He would have been put in a position to fail.
To fail,
that's
not
exactly
to win.
What it would have been. And you know what? He used the term. Scott used the term, and I've seen it in print.
Male practice.
And that's become,
I didn't even respond.
That's become the sexy catchphrase now. It's been football malpractice. Okay, it's been football. I mean, really.
It was a lack of a game plan, a lack of execution, which is kind of a telltale sign of what took place this season.
Look, the game plan was for him to come in and be me and my shadow with Eli Manning. And when I say be me and my shadow, their lockers are right next to one another.
Yeah.
You cannot walk in to the dining room. You cannot walk around this building, could not walk around through the entire season without seeing one without
the other.
Yep. So when they talk about mentoring, the mentoring goes on. It's an ongoing process. They talk about, well, Eli will mentor the next person. Let's say it's Davis Webb next year. Let's say it's another quarterback. Eli's not going to sit with them and sit down with a little chalkboard and this is what you do here. It's watching.
Do
you think Tom Brady sat down with Garoppolo? Do you think Brett Favre sat down with Aaron Rodgers?
We know that he did it. Yeah,
exactly. No, but you're sitting watching.
Yeah.
You're observing what the hell is going on.
Two ears, one mouth. Sit back and watch and listen to what you're seeing and what he's doing and the way that he prepares. And believe me, Davis Webb has taken all of it to heart, and you can see it. He's here early in the morning. He's in there breaking down, watching film. You see him diligently taking notes. And in practice, when I have been out there to watch practice, when that first team is going, he's listening and watching Eli Manning direct and control everything that way as well.
That's part of the mentorship, folks. Travis in Queens, how are you, buddy? Happy New Year.
Hey, buddy, how you guys doing? Happy New Year to you guys.
Good. Excellent. What's going
Travis
on, Trav?
What's up?
Hey, none. Did you guys catch the college?
Did you catch
the bowl game?
Part of them, yeah. I kind of, to be honest with you, I fell asleep because the last one was a stinker to me, unless you were a Bama fan.
Yeah, if you're a Bama fan, you were loving life.
Yeah, right. My father is. But speaking of the college, right, I was saying, for this pick, I don't know if you guys have been following the season of college football, but I don't know how they pass on Saquon Barkley.
Because if you don't have an offensive lineman in front of him and an offensive line in front of him, Travis, a great running back will be an average to bad one.
Travis, you're talking to somebody
who's played offensive line for 20 years of their life. We see it happen year in and year out where running backs coming out of college can be excellent pros. But we're talking about the ones that didn't have offensive lines in front of them are like Barry Sanders that are Hall of Famers. You're talking about people that can just put the game on their back and win it individually. I love Saquon Barkley. I think that he is an unbelievable running back. But in order to make that pick, you better solidify and fix your offensive line before that.
So let me ask you a question, Dave. Based on exactly what you said, and I agree with that, but based on that, do you think, would it be a shock to you if they drafted Barkley, or is it a matter of seeing how things work out and what their game plan is, we can get these linemen in place and then draft
Barkley? I think that's part of it, is you've got to see what they're going to try to do through free agency to help address the offensive line. Are they going to re-sign Justin Pugh or Weston Bridgeford or one of them or none of them? There's a lot of questions when it's coming to the offensive line and what they're going to do to address that first before they make that second pick.
Yeah, but that's the same scenario for a quarterback as well.
What's that?
As far as what's the Saquon Barkley? Because the reason why I mention him is because I think he's the best player in the draft, as far as just overall. I mean, you check his tape, he's consistent.
I've watched him all season. Like I said, I think that he is a unbelievable running back and brings things to the table that you haven't seen since Ezekiel Elliott and Adrian Peterson coming out of college. I agree with you in that aspect.
I got two questions for you guys. Go ahead, though.
No, but what I was saying is that he's great. He has that ability. But what are you going to do if you do not fix the offensive line and you have the Philadelphia Eagles come in here and they're going to just play eight in the box and you have no running game? You're falling back right into the same problem that we had in 16 and 17.
Right. Well, going into the question that I was posing, I was with the theory that, Dave Gettleman, he's going to get the line, right?
He will.
Something tells me. Huh?
He will. Believe me. Of all things he will do, he will get the O-line and the D-line rolling.
My first question to you guys is, do you think if he get an O-line, rolling, and he sometimes he might switch up the deck anyway, like move Flowers to right or maybe whatever the case may be. But anyway, do you think that if we get a line, that would you go quarterback or running back?
It depends on what they feel is that their best move at that pick.
No, I mean you guys, like you personally.
Well, you're asking me a question before they even address the offensive line, and you're telling me, are we getting any picks? Have people offered to trade down for two? Are we 100% sold on that quarterback or the running back? You're asking us questions that we can't answer.
If they get the offensive line, if you're asking me, and I'm not the expert that certainly that Dave is here. But
right.
if they get the offensive line, as far as who should they pick, I'm going to go. I have my faith in Gettleman and what they're going to assess. If they feel Eli's the guy now and Davis Webb is the future, then let them grab a running back or whoever they think is best available at a certain position.
And once again, we're sitting here talking about the draft and Dave Gettleman, but to go along with this, who's going to be the head coach and the offensive coordinator and what type of system are we going to run? Those are big questions based upon if it's the quarterback, whether it's the running back, and how this team is going to move forward in regards to, I know people ask, an offensive-minded coach, defensive-minded coach. I think it goes with that number two pick. If Dave Gettleman decides that Eli Manning is still going to be a Giant in 2018, that's where a Josh McDaniels head coach fits perfectly. Number one, he's done it with Tom Brady, where Tom Brady is getting older. Number one, secure thing, let's protect Tom Brady. Number two, let's find ways to attack defenses' weaknesses and protect our weaknesses. And three, Josh McDaniels' system is the same terminology, a lot of the same play calling that we ran all under Coach Gilbride.
But it's not a West Coast offense?
You know that there's only two quarterbacks that have won the Super Bowl that were West Coast quarterbacks, Steve Young and Aaron Rodgers.
The only two?
Thank you for that history. Wow. Yeah,
Those were the only ones that ran a true scrambling mobile rollout. You could say that Montana was a West Coast, but that was a passing game where it was a true West Coast move, change the launch point. Steve Young and Aaron Rodgers are the only ones that have done it.
All right.
Wow. We're talking about two Hall of Famers.
Without question.
Because I was going to ask like similar question about like the coach. And you guys' opinion, is there any candidate out there that's like, you know, like, a giant, that has a giant philosophy, which is, you know.
I don't know that. Travis, that's up for
you guys' opinion as far as who's out there.
I don't know those coordinators well enough. I always become, when it comes to stuff, and it's not just in this sport. You know, it's like when they talk about the draft. Unless you're a frontline player, on a major college team.
Yeah.
I don't know who they're going to pick in the third and fourth round or from, Podunk, wherever you are. And same thing, like in baseball. A guy's been in the minors and the boonies. This guy's a can't-miss. The only way he's a can't-miss because some agent or somebody is telling you he's a can't-miss. Travis – to me and Buddy, as always, pal, Happy New Year. Thank you for the call.
Absolutely. Happy New Year.
I just have to wait and assess that.
Obviously, as of right now, the candidates out there, obviously Steve Spagnuolo, talked about Jim Schwartz as a possible candidate, Josh McDaniels,
Shermer's been mentioned. Right. I don't know them as head coaches.
Yes.
I'm not watching them on an everyday basis. I mean, what I know about New England or McDaniel, I know what he did with Tom Brady. I also know what he didn't do in Denver. So, I mean, if you wanted, a small sample, that's not a good sample. Timothy in Jackson, New Jersey. Timothy, you're on with Russ and Dave. How are you, buddy?
I'm following our question. The Giants will name former Packers defensive coordinator Dom Capers, the same position, replacing Steve Spagnuolo, hired Patriots offense coordinator Josh McDaniels as the new head coach, signing Isaiah Crowell, Kyle Long, Nate
All right, Tim.
Greg Robinson, Nick Soder, and Sammy Watkins, Ty Whitehead, and re-sign Justin Pugh and Weston Richburg, and select Saquon Barkley, second overall from Penn State in the first round.
All right, Timothy. Thank you. Tim's got it. He's got his checklist and everything. Far be it for me to argue with that logic. Thank you for the call and a happy new year, Tim. Let's stay in Jersey and go to Hank. What's up, Hank?
Russ, you mentioned the other day you don't trade problems or talent away.
What I said was you don't give up on talent. That was courtesy of Dave Gettleman. That's what I said.
Okay, so what do you do with this Beckham guy? I mean, the Yankees got rid of Billy Martin because he was a bad influence on Mantle. Now, I'm not trying to compare and size the talent, but at what point does a 22, 23-year-old guy finally get it that he's being a jerk or
Hank, slow down, Hank. Number one, don't make a comparison with Billy Martin. And Billy Martin was a good baseball player. But don't make a comparison to Billy Martin and Odell Beckham Jr. Because Billy Martin was not as good at his game, not remotely as good at his game as Odell Beckham Jr. is at his game. That's number one. And you know what? You can talk about immaturity, Hank. You can talk about a lot of things. You know, this business, he's a jerk. I tend to disagree with you. I do disagree with you. Has he made some mistakes? Yes, he's made some mistakes. Those mistakes were redressed. One was addressed with the owner. That stuff cannot happen, and nor should it happen, and I don't think it'll happen again. You don't give up. You want to talk about talent. Let me tell you something. You want to get rid of Odell Beckham Jr.? You will have a lineup of 31 other teams waiting at the door going bang, bang, bang. Yeah. What do you want? You know, so Hank, I gotta don't make the comparison. You're talking about one of the premier players in the game, Hank. So while I thank you for the call, I have to strongly disagree. But I do wish you a happy new year, and you know, feel free to call again next season. Thanks very much. Let's go back to our buddies, Coach Marvin from Delaware.
There we go.
What's up, Coach?
Hey, how you doing, Russ?
How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing okay. I just wanted to thank you and Paul for the kind words you give me, and I appreciate everything y'all say about me, and I respect you guys.
Well, we respect you, and today you got Dave to respect you as well, so go ahead.
Oh, I've been a fan of Dave. Like I said, I've been a Giant fan since 75. David Steele, one of my favorites. The only guy, guy went from guard to went to play tackle and played it very well.
Thanks, Coach. How's everything going? What can we answer for you?
Well, I just wanted to go back to one of the questions we were talking about. They're talking about the draft, and I talked to Russ them yesterday that I prefer that they trade out and maybe address the offensive line or do something in that nature. But after watching Barkley, he blew me away. I have watched the film on most of these guys. I watched the film, and I understand what you said, address the line. And I'm sure that the front office, everybody kind of like blowing off all this thing of what they think they're doing. I'm sure they got 25 to 50 scenarios of what they want to do in this draft. Because if they don't, they're gonna find themselves behind. And I know Gettleman is well prepared, and I know they're going to look at every scenario in this draft. But I was just thinking, what did you think? Because Barkley is the guy. If they don't trade out of that two and they stay at the two, take Barkley, trade back into the bottom half of the first round and address the offensive line like you were saying. I agree with that. And they address someone in the free agency on that offensive line. Would that justify Barkley's pick for you?
It would. If they figured out ways to address the offensive line, that they could take him and help this offense and this team in other positions, absolutely. Because like I was saying earlier when Travis called, Barkley is incredible. He is an unbelievable talent that will take it to the next level. It's just getting the pieces in front of him in order to do it and let him get success in the NFL.
But you know what, Coach Marv, you know, as Dave just said, we were talking about it a little early. I'm sure you heard. it's a matter of putting the Giants, putting all their ducks in a row to figuring out how and what exactly what they need and how they can, what they need to do to get to where they need. You follow what I'm saying?
I totally agree.
If it can work out, who wouldn't want Saquon Barkley?
Yeah.
I mean, that's like a no-brainer, but it's got to be worked out.
Right. I'm just afraid that if they don't try to work that out, that they can lose this pick. If you watch that 90-something yard run that he outran guys on the angle, that had angles on him, it was unbelievable. The guys just don't never get caught from behind. And I like the tri-threat he is. He's a very good runner. He can catch the ball, and he's a kick and punt returner. And he's picking up blitzes very well. So he's an all-around back, and it'll be sad to see him get away. I mean, we're going to do what's best for our team, I believe. But it'll be sad to see him get away. But if he gets away, then, you know, we can only go with whoever they pick and support that pick.
All right, Coach Marv. Happy New Year, my friend.
Happy New Year.
You be well.
And nice talking to you, Dave.
You as well, Coach. Have a great one. All the best. Happy New Year.
Who wouldn't want a running back?
No kidding.
You know, it becomes a no-brainer. But, again, everything has to be worked out.
No question. And then that also with that pick at number two, is that too much to jump and grab a running back when you could possibly think that there'd be one in the second or third round that you can get that could come in and be effective for you as well?
Yeah, but and again, at the same point, there's running backs and then there's superstars.
Oh, yeah.
And I think Barkley is projected at,
no question.
At that.
And believe me, like I said, I've watched him all season. He is absolutely incredible. But for me, I just think that there's other pieces, like the offensive line, that they have to take care of before they come in and pick a running back at number two.
And, you know, they always talk about this being listen, as a old – I don't want to say old. I'll say former offensive lineman.
Okay.
Everybody loves – offensive lineman loves a strong running game.
Oh, yeah.
But everybody talks about today this league has become – it is a passing league. You know what? It's a passing and it's a passing and it's a passing. But you know what? Give me a great running back and all of a sudden you miss that running back when you need the running back.
I know.
Everybody, it's a passing league, but everybody wants the running back. Mike in Fort Myers, you're on with Russ and David. How you doing, buddy?
Fine. Dave, I had a wonderful time with you last week. Russ, you were there as well. You kind of shocked me when we talked about moving Flowers over and making some changes on the defensive line. But I'm going to ask you a couple of hypothetical questions. Should a head coach who is a defensive coordinator be hired, and he prefers the 3-4 defense, do we have the personnel to play the 3-4? What do you guys think?
As of right now, no. That is a big systematic change because now we're talking about a linebacker crew that we need linebackers, and now we're going from three of them to four of them where you have to have a rotation of actually six of them when it comes to third down and different nickel packages and situations, and then you're talking about defensive tackles. So then Snacks Harrison and Delvin Tomlinson would essentially be playing the same position, nose tackle. So then you're taking two of the guys systematically that played well in the 4-3 this year and basically bookending them on the same spot, and then you're going to have to go out and bigger, heavier defensive ends that are head-up guys on both tackles. So you're looking at rebuilding an entire defense if you're looking to go from a 4-3 to a 3-4.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you. That helps a lot. I want to talk to you about drafting offensive linemen. And I've had discussions with a bunch of old senior citizens like myself, and we're wondering how many years of college playing time is the minimal amount of experience that you should go for an offensive lineman. And this has to do with maybe the lack of experience that we think Flowers had. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, obviously, to play college ball and then to go to the NFL, it's a minimum of 2 years. You have to have 2 years of college experience before getting to the pros. So that's the answer in that regard. In regards to how many years an offensive lineman should play, I mean, obviously players that play a lot of college ball and show that they've learned the techniques and fundamentals transition better into the NFL. But also it is also from what college, what type of system that you ran. Are they teaching you spread stuff? Are they teaching you pro-style offenses? So I think it's just very specific and different to each player. I mean, the same could be said for any other position.
Well, let me ask you a question on that, Dave. Mike brings up that is a good point. But and certainly a young guy like Flowers. Flowers came into the league at 20 years old. But I would say, just from being around the game enough, that other than the quarterback position, the offensive lineman is probably the hardest position to learn in football.
Yeah, I mean, definitely.
To grasp.
Without a doubt, because you have to know everything that's taking place out on the field. You've got to make calls. You got to know what the offensive lineman, the tackle on the other side, is doing. As an offensive tackle, I would have to know on certain pass plays if they're running a quick slant, if it's going to a Y stick, which is a tight end, usually 5 to 10 yard, put his foot in the ground, turn back for the football. Those are things as a tackle I would have to remember in the protections with the calls, because on those I know that I have to keep a defensive end's hands down so that he doesn't knock it up and it either gets interception or tip for an interception. So there are so many things that go into being a smart offensive lineman, where you're not just worried about your job, you're worried about everything that's taking place out on the field. And in between plays, I would be sitting there communicating with Kareem on the other side, because he's getting a different look from the weak side or from the strength that I wasn't getting it on the left. And then following in that game, I may get that look later on. And if I didn't communicate and talk to Kareem about it, maybe I wouldn't pick it up. So the communication, the knowledge, the understanding, and just awareness that you have to have as an offensive lineman.
All right, Mike.
Super. I got one other hypothetical question.
Sure.
Should Sean McVay become the head coach? He's run quick, short passes.
Sean McVay is the head coach of the Los Angeles Rams.
I mean, the guy up in Boston.
Josh McDaniels.
Should he become the head coach and runs that short passing game, does that increase the value of Shane Vereen to the Giants?
I mean, I think that it would, because you're using him more as a pass catcher. But obviously, I think the effectiveness of Shane Vereen has been up and down in his career, especially as a Giant, because of all the injuries.
Yeah, I was thrilled when Shane came here, and so was Paul DeTuna. We talk about it all
the
time.
But he hasn't lived up to the expectations.
Well, part of it has been the injury, but I'd be surprised if he's back.
Could Perkins take over the role?
I think that's just what I was going to say.
He's just a bad blocker.
No, I think Paul Perkins might very well.
I think he can, but once again, it's going to come for him to competition coming in this year. Because believe me, there are going to be no guarantees for anybody on this roster. You're going to have to earn the right to come back. You're going to have to earn the right to go to training camp, and you're going to have to earn the right not only to make the 53, but be on the 46 to dress for games.
Thanks for the call, Mike. A happy and healthy new year to you and all your friends down in Fort Myers. Let's now go from Fort Myers up to Portland, Maine, and speak with Charlie. Charlie, you're on with Russ and David. How are you? Happy New Year.
Hey, happy New Year to you guys. I can't believe it. You guys, this is your last show. You guys come waltzing in just for the season when the tough stuff starts happening, the draft, free agency, and everything, and you guys are just like bailing.
You could call the Giants and say, we want them back right away every day. There you go.
All right. Hey, David, I got a question for you. Doesn't a running back, a good running back, a great running back, make an offensive line better? My example is the Dallas Cowboys. They have a great offensive line, but when Zeke is in there, they're better. And if you got a guy like Barkley we're talking about, he would make our offensive line so much better than it would be with any other ordinary running back. Isn't that true, Mr. Deal?
It is. Now let me come back with a
okay.
Hold on. Let me retort.
Okay.
Now will you say that Dallas offense – and that Dallas offensive line and Dak Prescott looked the same exact way with different running backs in there than they did with Ezekiel Elliott?
No. I think they looked better with Elliott there.
Exactly. So they looked different when they didn't have Ezekiel Elliott in there. when they had different running backs in there. I'm saying, so they put, don't you think it put a lot more pressure on Dak Prescott at the quarterback position? Don't you think when Tyron Smith got hurt at the tackle position, it hurt the running game? Don't you think when they were interchanging people at right tackle, it hurt the running game? All those factors. So when Ezekiel Elliott went out, they weren't running as successfully with those running backs behind them. And then when Tyron Smith went out, their run game was completely ineffective. So once again, it comes back to the offensive line. Yeah, the running back makes people look better, but until you have an offensive line like they have in Dallas, then we can't sit here and fairly assess how Ezekiel Elliott would have looked.
I agree. It's first of all,
It's hard. I
also think he was kind of bringing out a point. When you have a stud, if you will, and it's perfectly normal for a team like the offensive lineman. When you have your A guy behind you as opposed to your B or your C guy at quarterback.
It opens everything, without a doubt. It
opens everything up, Charlie.
Yeah, I'm back. Hey, I got cut off for a minute. But, yeah, David, what I was trying to say is that you got to trust Gettleman. He already said that I'm going after an offensive line that can run the ball, that can block. So you should go after a running back that is going to be just a great running back. And if you have somebody like Barkley and you have somebody like Dakwa, like, you know, those two would be almost like, not quite, but like Jacobs and Bradshaw. I think that would add a lot to our offense. Because now they're going to have to, look at our running game, and all of a sudden Eli can start those play-action passes again that he is so good at. And I think Gettleman will, when he looks at the tape, and the other thing is, like, when Gettleman looks at the tape, you know, he says it like these are facts and the tapes don't lie. But actually, it's not objective. It's subjective because everybody can look at tapes and see different things. And the example is the draft. They'll look at somebody and on one guy's board, you know, this guy's high. On another team's board, he's low. So it's very subjective.
Well, yeah, but Charlie, you have to remember something, buddy, and thank you as always for the call. But
all right, guys, take care.
You got to remember this. Dave Gettleman does it for a living. He's been doing it for a living for a long time, and he arguably there might not be anybody better in terms of personnel or making those assessments.
No.
So it's not like just anybody looking at film.
No,
I mean,
question.
That's
like
what
I
the
said,
study
I have,
is.
I have the utmost respect, confidence in the job that Dave Gettleman's going to do. And like I said, I absolutely love Saquon Barkley. But in order to do that, there are other things like fixing the offensive line and other areas that you need to address before thinking that that is going to be the pick that's going to turn the franchise around itself. It's not. There are other pieces that need to go with it.
Cliff in Pennsylvania. Cliff, you're on with Russ and David. Happy New Year. What do you got for us?
Happy New Year to you too, fellas. Just a couple of comments real quick. I think that at least from my perspective, the expectations going into 2018 are obviously not particularly high. So I'm wondering if you can comment about the thought of how long it might take for the team to get back to being, you know, that highly competitive team. And you were talking about fixing the O-line. I think one of the things that stands out, you fix the O-line, maybe you get back to winning time of possession, dominating, you know, that aspect of the game. I think we really haven't seen that in a couple of years. And I think that part of that might also be, Dave, what you alluded to before, is that, you know, going to the West Coast system, you know, the quick strike, the, you know, no huddle offense. I don't know that it has proven out to be a way to win time of possession. So I think you fix the O-line, if you have a little different system in place for the offense. And then my last question is, if you can comment on the possibility that Coach Spagnuolo is retained as the defensive coordinator.
You know,
Thanks, guys.
In regards to that system, like I said, that's, you know, if you can run it successfully, you know, yeah, you can win games, you can put a lot of points on the board. But a prime example where one year it was a complete success and it was a complete failure the next year was the Chip Kelly experiment in Philadelphia. Came in, huge storm, Nick Foles throwing lights out. All of a sudden, defenses pick up on it. They're not as effective. And when you're running up tempo and you're not getting first downs, next thing you know, your defense is averaging 38 minutes out on the field and your offense only 22.
You know, Cliff, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, no, Cliff, you know what? Also about Spags, listen, you've heard me say it here. I'm a big supporter of him. I would love for him, you know, if he's retained, I would be thrilled. With fans and what, as Dave pointed out, and understandably so, that could be a hard sell. But having said that, and listen, I'm sure the Giants, if they went in a direction other than Spags, Dave, if they went in another direction, you know, for a head coach, I'm sure they would be thrilled to, you know, to recommend that, yes, let's retain Spags as the defensive coordinator. But in fairness to any new head coach, he's got to pick his guy.
Yeah.
If he was adverse and said, no, I specifically want this guy, then it would be his guy.
And that's in when yeah. That's what something Dave Gettleman was asked. He said, you know, obviously there are some great coaches and some great football players here. And he goes, hey, I would suggest if you would want to talk to him. But he goes, the coaches are the head coach's responsibility. Those are his hires. Those right. are the guys that he feels that he's comfortable with and wants on staff that he can let go of the reins and coach his coach and not micromanage. So that's going to be on the head coach to do so.
You know, it's not dissimilar from ownership with the general manager. You hire Dave Gettleman, it's his team. Go make the deals. And that's been that way. It was that way with George Young.
Yep.
It was that way with Ernie Accorsi. It was that way with Jerry Reese. And it's going to be that way with Dave Gettleman. Thanks for the call, Cliff. Happy New Year
to you.
Yep. Let's go to Staten Island and speak with Peter. Happy New Year, Pete.
Happy New Year, guys. You remember formerly from Brooklyn, Sheepshead Bay, I'm one of your boys.
There you go, buddy boy. How are you?
Good. First off, I want to say I love the Gettleman move because we talk about the offensive line and the trenches, and I absolutely love that. Oh, God, I love that. You know, getting back to the big guys. But here's my question. Is it harder? Let's say, for instance, you go for an offensive-minded coach, right? Now, at that point, let's say, for instance, I'll throw out McDaniel, right? So you bring in Josh McDaniel, who has his system, and you figure he's going to call the plays. In that particular case, you really do not need an offensive coordinator. Not to say that you wouldn't have one.
No, you need an offensive
coordinator. I'm sure you will.
I'll let Dave answer that, but
yeah, you need an offensive coordinator.
Okay, but my point is it harder to hire a defensive guy, right? Let's say a guy from Carolina, who I think very highly of, by the way.
Wilkes.
And then get a top-line offensive coordinator to run your offense. Do you follow? Which way do you believe is the easier transition? Because I happen to believe, like, if McDaniel were to come aboard, he gets his offensive coordinator, and that now that might be a quarterback coach, could be, you know, whatever it might be. But from if you get a defensive-minded coach, it's got to be harder, I think, to find a top-line offensive coordinator. What's your reply, guys?
I think every situation is different.
I do as well.
Also, doesn't personnel have a lot to do with that?
And that's what I was going to say. It's a lot different. Look at the prime example of the Los Angeles Rams and Jared Goff. They needed a head coach that was offensive-minded because when you go out and you get a number one pick that shows signs but struggles in his first year and your franchise is leaning on him to get the job done, getting a head coach like Sean McVay, who is an offensive-minded guy, helps, but it also helps wonders for him that he can go get a Wade Phillips to run the defense and be the defense coordinator so he could sit back and not worry about it. I think a lot has to depend on your personnel, the team that you're taking over. What type of leadership are they? Are their leadership more on the defensive side or the offensive side of the ball? Where are the younger players? Where have we struggled at the most as a team?
Who needs fixing more, exactly.
Who needs fixing more? And those are things that you tailor that selection and that decision based upon.
Right. You know, I noticed that, you know, and the gentleman from Carolina, I did a lot of reading, and I went on a couple of his press conferences just to find out what he's about. You know, I did a little studying, and that's why I said to you, I gained a high amount of respect. He's very well spoken, and I hope that that they take a serious look at him. And of course, he has the relationship with Mr. Gutterman. At any rate, I love the direction that they're going here. We do have some things, a lot of things to fix, but at least I think we're on the right track, and it seems to me Dave is a no-nonsense guy, and you got to love that part of it, too.
All right, Peter.
And you guys have a happy New Year.
Happy Peter. And healthy to you, and go to Brennan and Carr in Sheepshead Bay. Let's get a roast beef. How's that? Okay. Let's go to Jodo right now in PA. Joe, how you doing? You're on with Russ and David.
Hey, glad to sneak in here. Did I hear you say this was your last show? Here you guys.
It's our last regular season show because this is the last week of Big Blue Kickoff.
Oh, Hank, Big Blue Kickoff going all through the year like before?
I don't think the schedule is the same.
I think
that
it picks back up once you start getting towards the draft.
Yes.
And free agency and all that stuff.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you, I just want to say it's a great time to be a Giant. After this season, you know what I mean? I just think we're in a wonderful position. And, you know, people are talking how fast you think we can flip this around. Hey, well, last year, was that a mirage where we were 11-5? Is that what we were?
11-6. See, that's one thing. Everybody leaves out the playoff loss, and it drives me crazy.
Well,
because everybody goes 11-5.
I think we, with the talent on this team here, and we had a very tough season. Everything that could go wrong went wrong. I think just by the stability of everything, everybody getting on the same page could make 2-3 wins there. And I think it could flip that fast again. Maybe not to 13-3 from 3-13, but I would not be surprised 10-6 and right back into the playoffs.
Well, I would say this, Joe, and I'll bet. Well, I haven't discussed it with Dave, but I'll bet you're going to agree with me. They're not going into the season. I don't know what's going to happen, but they're not going into the season next year saying, let's hope to get back to 8-8.
Let's just survive. No.
One game at a time. And the headlines ain't going to be in the post, you know, Super Bowl right away and everything like that. So I listened to Eli Manning say, you know, they talked to him about this and everything. He said, hey, let's just get into the playoffs, and then you never know what can happen. Before, he said, the Super Bowls we won before, we didn't, you know what I mean? We had to get in there, and, hey, we went one game at a time.
Well,
too. So, just one other thing with Barkley, what you're saying, everybody's talking. I'm just saying we're in a great position because – We have our chance at quarterbacks, at linebackers, and even if we don't take Barkley, he is a fantastic talent that maybe someone else will want to trade up for him.
Exactly. That's why the Giants – Joe, thank you. A happy new year. We'll talk to you again. That's what being in that number two position is. You could sit back, ascertain, figure out what you need, what you want to go, and what does everybody else need.
Exactly. They need to move up to you. They need your pick if they're desperately vying for a quarterback or a certain individual player, and that's why that number two pick has and will always hold that much value.
You know, he just said something about just getting in, like Eli said, just getting into the playoffs. Listen, no better example. There is no better example than the two Super Bowl championship teams that you were on. And Bill Parcells used to say it. He used to use the phrase – and I used to see it with him when they got into the playoffs, just like when they clinched the playoff spot, you could see it was almost like a relief.
Yeah.
And this was coming from Parcells. He would say, you just got to get into the tournament.
That's it.
You just got to get into the tournament. And listen, we're not in the tournament. Giants are not in the tournament this year. I'm sure that's the goal going into next season. They're not looking, as Dave used the phrase, a good one, we're not looking to survive.
Yeah.
We're not looking just to compete. They're looking to do well. That's what professional athletes, how they think. Anyway, folks, listen, It's been great being with you this season. Had a blast. Look forward to it again. Hopefully, you got some busy days coming up ahead. There's going to be a head coach named in the not-too-distant future. So that's excitement for all of us. But in the meantime, thanks for being part of Big Blue Kickoff here on Giants.com. For my buddy David Deal, it's been a pleasure, my friend.
Absolutely. Happy New Year. Have a great one.
I'm Russ Salzberg, and we'll see you next time.